Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Sports Radio 610 presents The Drive with Sterner and Hughley. With the biggest stories of the day, it's the Big 3 at 3. Number 1.
Strat of the gun on 2nd and 24. Here's the snap. CJ looking. CJ firing downfield. Hits Nico. 10, 5 to the end zone. Touchdown, Houston. A flag on the play.
Now that's weight room right there, baby.
That's weight room right there, baby. Go ahead,
wow.
Andre. The Texans, they can move to 2-0 as they play the Bears for a tough, hard-fought win, 19-13. And now they lead the AFC South by two games because everybody else has lost their first two games. Clint, for you, what jumped out as for you, if you had to pick it up, the number one reason this team was able to win this game and get to 2-0 over the Bears in a surprisingly closer game than I think many people expected?
DeMeco Ryans, the defensive coordinator. This defense was lights out. 23 pressures on 48 pass plays. Seven of them, I think, ended up in sacks, something like that. So the rate in which DeMeco Ryans said, to hell with it, I'm fixing to dial up pressures, was a difference in this game. He never allowed Caleb Williams, the young quarterback, or his offensive line, or his play caller, he never allowed those guys to take a breath, to catch their breath. They were absolutely exhausted. DJ Moore, a very frustrated wide receiver, at one point in the game, you and I watched him essentially tapped out and just walked down the sideline before the game was over, but late in the ball game. So I think ultimately the difference in this ball game was that DeMeco Ryans never called the dogs off. Just said, it reminded me, Ron, of 2 years ago when we watched the Dolphins, maybe it was 3 years ago, the Dolphins defense and the way that they treated the Texans when Tyrod Taylor ended up getting hurt in that game and Davis Mills came in, I think, if I remember correctly. But their approach to defense was just smothering. We're going to blitz. We're going to bring pressure. And then we watched a week later, this is why it matters, we watched a week later the same defense deploy the same strategy on Lamar Jackson, one of the best quarterbacks in the game and one of the most prolific, productive offenses in the game, and it worked like a charm. Now, the Bears are nowhere near what Lamar Jackson is and what kind of offense they had and they have now or had at the time, but when it's all said and done, the guts to go, man, we're going to line up in man defense. We're just going to show you. We're coming. We're coming. We're blitzing. We're bringing pressure, and y'all don't have answers. To do that for four quarters, literally for four quarters, was awfully impressive. The fellas obviously executed. They deserve a ton of credit, but it's hard to give one guy credit over the other. They all 11 guys were really, really good for the most part in that game, with the exception of a couple of penalties. Was really, really, really good. So I got to tip my cap to DeMeco Ryans, the defensive coordinator. That was big time, and that is how you that's what a defensive coordinator that is a weapon from the sideline, that's exactly what it's supposed to look like, is he should never allow a rookie quarterback, especially one that in week one was clearly overwhelmed and confused versus the Titans, a weapon on the sideline, the defensive coordinator. If he doesn't keep that rookie quarterback swimming, mentally confused, exhausted, then he's not a real weapon on the sideline, right? That is a moment where you have so much of an advantage versus Aaron Rodgers and Pat Mahomes, different story. When it's Caleb Williams, you've got so much of an advantage, and DeMeco Ryans went out there yesterday as a defensive coordinator and earned his keep, without a doubt. Loved it.
Yeah, and we talked about it Friday. Be disappointing if this defense didn't just overwhelm and dominate this offense, and they absolutely did. As you said, boy, I mean, they had they had Caleb Williams on the sideline, looked like he had just taken the ACT. I mean, he was mentally drained over there.
I think it was Tyler. I don't know who originally did the graphic, but it's a tremendous graphic. It's one of Justin Fields last year in that same uniform, leaned back on that
orange one.
That was me.
Eyes closed, yeah. And then next thing you know, Caleb Williams, boom, leaned back with them eyes closed. Anytime you got a quarterback, and I said it when Justin Fields did it, I don't even know what the hell was going on. I don't know what game that was in, but I looked at the TV and I saw Justin Fields doing that. I said, when your quarterback looks like he's sleeping or meditating on the sideline, your offense is in a bad spot. And that's exactly what Caleb Williams.
Welcome to the NFL, Rook.
It was, and they weren't, and D'Amico and Matt Burke, I'll give him some credit too in there. They were not deterred, even when, you know, DJ Moore got loose a couple of times on some catches where, you know, they're sending a lot of pressure, not a lot of help behind, where he breaks one tackle and he gets some yard. They didn't say, hold on. Hey, let's back up here. No, they said, no, let's see how many times you can do that.
Well, you look at the biggest plays. Caleb Williams had a 24-yard scramble, and I think Roma Dunze late in the game had a 27-yard catch or something like that. With the exception of that, there was DJ Moore, as you mentioned, scurried open a couple of times on some underneath routes, but there was just absolutely nothing there. They were absolutely smothered, overwhelmed, couldn't complete balls, didn't have answers, like completely did not have answers with the exception of the first couple drives.
There was nothing the Bears could turn to and say, this is something we can
lay our hat on. Ron
looked
at me in the press box and said, man, what do you do? I said, what do you mean what do I do? If you're the Bears, what do you do? I said, man, hell, I don't.
Because they were coming out where it's like, you know, this is a weird game, but like for most of the second half, if they scored a touchdown, they'd take the lead.
It's just like,
what do you do?
The interesting thing, and this has got to be like D'Amico. When I say D'Amico, you know, senses blood in the waters. Like, I've never understood at any level in football, but definitely the NFL level, when your quarterback snap, you know, pressure's coming, man. It's blatantly obvious. They're not disguising a damn thing. And your quarterback catches the football, and he sits back there and pats it like he's got all day long, and you've got three of your four receivers are running routes and 10, 15 yards down the field, they still ain't even looked at you, right? I mean, that's why you got to look at this offensive coordinator and go, hey, man, either you're coaching it or you're allowing it. Like, if I'm a receiver, Ron, and I got a vertical route, let's say I'm going to stem this thing to 12 yards and I'm going to go to the corner. My back's going to be to the quarterback, right? And I see pressure. I look inside and I see a pressure look. When I come off the ball, I'm at least going to look at the quarterback just because I know his ass is in trouble. I'm going to make myself available to some degree. I mean, these guys are just running off. And you got one guy running underneath, and he happens to have one of the best corners in the league, and Derek Stingley chasing him. So it was just one of the things where you go, man, if I'm a quarterback and I'm getting this kind of pressure, all right, we're going all out quicks, boys. If I got four wide receivers out here, we're going slants. Even if I want to throw a fade right now, I'm putting 1 foot, one step, and I'm getting a fade up. I'm going to throw a bang eight, which is a timing route where the ball's out. Don't even really need protection. I'll be damned if I'm going to sit back there and wait for guys to run 12, 15-yard curl routes. Like that's a poorly coached offense as well as the struggle in between whistles when the play's actually happening as well. They're poorly coached. The quarterback just doesn't have options.
Yeah, and after the game, Roma Dunze, who he tried to connect to at the end, that was the last play on that fourth down where it ended it, he came out and said he ran the wrong route. Because we said it, boy, they were completely on different pages. He's still screaming up the field, and he throws like an out.
Mm-hmm.
But he did say, I ran the wrong route.
But that is exactly what, now I don't know if it's the case with Roma Dunze, but that is when your quarterback looks like Caleb Williams looked like on the sideline with that head kickback, what do you think DJ Moore feels like? Hell, he done ran 14 miles out there and he's been hit as many times as CJ Stroud. And so that's exactly what pressure does. When I say pressure busts pipes, or it makes diamonds, right? It busts pipes in the sense of Chicago, because what you do is you're so frustrated, things are moving so fast, you're tired of getting the hell beat out of you, you're tired of not moving the football, you're tired of going three and out, you're tired of punting, your mind goes elsewhere, and all of a sudden you run the wrong route, boom, game over. I mean, that's just ultimately how it works, and the pressure caused some big-time problems on that offense.
D'Amico Ryan's coming up hopefully here in the next segment, so stay tuned for that as he'll speak to the media after having a chance to watch a little bit of the film a day after. We'll have that for you right here live on The Drive.
Big 3-3, number 2.
All right, Clint, the Astros had a big weekend. They go in and sweep the Angels, and they maintain having a 4.5-game lead in the AL West with 13 games to play over Seattle. And they win all of those games. They did what they needed to do and capped it off with a sweep on Sunday. But to me, Clint, the real story was Justin Verlander on Saturday. Justin Verlander against the Angels, 5 innings, 4 hits, 2 earned, 2 walks, 2 Ks, still just under 90 pitches, 89 pitches. And his ERA is at 5.20, and his ERA is still above 8 since he's returned from the IL. But that is, like, that's an, at least an improvement from what he's been doing. But 5 innings, 89 pitches, that is still a rough go of it for Justin Verlander. And I think he has helped make him, give himself a chance to maybe be in there. But it's still, this still isn't up to par to where the other guys are. But at least it wasn't eight runs in the first 2 innings or 5 runs in the first.
Yeah, well, I mean, look, it's a step in the right direction. I mean, it's Justin Verlander. It's not somebody this is a known commodity. He's moving in the right direction. Got a couple more starts. I did not personally watch much of that game. It was in the background. But I did watch the post-game show. And the conversation there revolved around not the best Verlander we've ever seen, but it was definitely a step in the right direction. I got to take their word for it. Obviously, the numbers back that up as well. And let's be honest, Verlander doesn't have to be great to be one of the three to start a game in the wild card. He doesn't have to be great to be one of 4 or 5 in an actual playoff series. He just has to show that he's capable and he's in the right spot and he can give us a chance to win. This is Justin Verlander we're talking about. Moving in the right direction, getting right over these next couple of games is going to be big.
Hey, fellas, you think if he has a similar output to this in the 2 remaining starts, it looks like he may have, 5 innings, 5, 6 innings or something like that. You think this gets him in the rotation?
Yeah.
I do too.
Yeah.
Yep. I heard that man say back at the baseball card last week.
Oh, God.
General manager said, hey, we know Justin.
Houston doesn't want to hear that no more.
He's the back of the baseball card guy.
Yeah, I mean, I would appreciate if they just didn't even shape their mouth to do 2 things. Talk about the back of the baseball card or talk about injuries. Just
leave, off the glove of Abreu.
Just leave that stuff alone.
I'm with you on that. But like you said, step in the right direction as they cap things off. All right, our baseball talk is presented by T-Mobile. Switch to T-Mobile and you can get tons of benefits and still save on every plan versus AT&T and Verizon. Use their calculator to find out how at T-Mobile.com/switch.
Big 3 at 3, number 3.
All right, this is the big news that's kind of dominating the NFL overall right now, and I'm wondering how surprised you guys are about this. Sources say that the Panthers are benching former number 1 overall pick Bryce Young and starting veteran Andy Dalton beginning this week. So after 2 weeks, they're benching Bryce Young. Obviously, there's a connection here as Bryce went number 1 and is the reason why I am Ron. Coach Dave Canales has repeatedly said, Bryce is our quarterback. But with the season quickly slipping away, Canales decided to make a change. So that is the latest. Bryce has been benched real quick. Jordan Schultz reports Panthers quarterback Bryce Young and those close to him were very shocked, quote, at the organization's decision to bench him this morning. It came out of nowhere, one source said. Safe to say, no one anticipated the plug being pulled after just 2 games with a new coaching staff. By the way, on this thing, Carolina, their 2025 second round pick still goes to Chicago as the final piece of that trade. They got DJ Moore, a 2023 first round pick, which became Darnell Wright. He had a tough night last night. And second round pick, which became Tyreek Stevenson. I know they really like him. Also, that 2004 first round pick became Caleb Williams. And again, they have another second-round pick to finish this thing off. You're surprised that this quickly that the Panthers pulled the plug on Bryce Young?
No, I'm not surprised because it's been bad Carolina for – I mean, at some point in time, they've got to get – the owner's not going to fire himself. They fired everybody else in the building already one time.
Coach didn't bring
you in. And there's really nowhere else to go other than – Bryce Young. I mean, at the end of the day, I have not watched Bryce Young's tape this year. I don't know what the situation is, but clearly he's not getting it done. The part of this I don't like is Canales' the reasoning. Look, we're all adults here, man. We're all grown ass men here. If I'm not giving this team the best chance to win, and you feel like there's somebody better behind me, then let's just move on. The whole Bryce is our quarterback. The season's slipping away. We've got to make a change. I mean, that whole spiel, if you will, to me, it just is so soft. It's poor leadership. When it's all said and done, there's nothing wrong with going to the mic and saying, we feel like Andy Dalton at this point in time with his experience and his leadership right now in this league gives us a better chance to get this organization rolling in the right direction right now. Bryce is one of our quarterbacks. He'll be in a quarterback room. We don't know what the future holds. We love Bryce, but right now the right thing for this team is for Andy Dalton to be the starting quarterback. Let's roll. The whole Bryce is our quarterback and making excuses of why you're making... No, you're making the change because the quarterback's not getting a job done. For whatever reason, he's not getting a job done. And you think that there's the experience and the knowledge, the know-how of an Andy Dalton who can allow this offense to take a stride in the right direction, which isn't crazy. It's not crazy. All rookies aren't C.J. Stroud. It's not crazy to think that a veteran quarterback will give you a chance to steady the ship, maybe get a win, maybe get a little momentum, but the whole soft shoe and the benching, man, look, it is what it is. He's not getting the job done. You're going to go in a different direction right now. You know, nobody's cutting him. He's still getting paid every Tuesday. He's still going to have opportunities down the road, but right now, Andy Dalton's the guy. It's just such a soft response or statement by Dave Canales. Other than that, I get it. Understand it.
Yeah, and for me, I think Bryce is this is not obviously the best situation to have walked in as a first-year quarterback. The things that has happened, the changes that has happened there. But for Bryce Young to be in the space of very shocked that the organization benched him this morning, I don't know if you could be very shocked. I mean, to put it in perspective, Will Levis has been awful, but oh Will Levis God. Is, but he's been a lot better than
yeah,
Bryce.
But yeah.
Like, so you can't be that. You can't be caught up. They don't look like a professional football team.
Yeah, but the problem here is in that scenario, right? We're not privy to the messaging that head coach Dave Canales has said to Bryce Young. If he's gone to the extent of saying, you're my guy, like what Mike McDaniels did with Tua. It ended up working out because Tua played well. The team played well. They won a bunch of games. But you hitch your wagon to this guy, and you tell him you're in his corner no matter what, and the whole time he's struggling, you're saying the right things. You're pouring positivity into him. And then all of a sudden, after a game on a Monday, you go, man, let's go. I'm gonna hit eject on this kid and move in a different direction. Like, you screwed up from the jump with all the messaging and all the kid gloves and all the stroking that you did. And now you've got to backtrack on that. That's never easy to do. And of course, the quarterback's going to be blindsided. Of course, he knows he hadn't been playing well. But there's a level of confidence in his mind that the coach has got my back. I can go out here and try to lead and say what I need to say and do what I need to do to hopefully turn this thing. And now all trust is broken because I'd be willing to bet you there's some very strong commitments. Has been communicated from Dave Canales to Bryce Young, and this right here just did it in after two games.
All right, D'Amico Ryan's coming up next. We'll have him as he is talking to the media the day after they get to 2-0 against the Bears. D'Amico coming up next.
It's a Shoppers John Deere Reaction Monday on Sports Radio 610. Here's The Drive with Sterner and Hughley.
All right, welcome back in on a Reaction Monday, Victory Monday, and a Mad Dog Monday. Let's head out to NRG and hear from the head coach, D'Amico Ryans, as he is speaking to the media on Monday.
You're going to start doing like Luther Vandross, man. You're just going to get you some tannin. You start smoking rivals.
I hear you.
D'Amico, I wanted to ask about D'Amico. How did you feel like, what was your determination of the tackle on Joe Mixon? Did you determine after your film that it was hipped up? And also, how did his absence maybe affect the flow of the offense after he went out?
Right, losing Joe was tough for our offense. We know the production that Joe had the first week, it was beneficial, and it was key to our success in the first week. And with the tackle, right, it's definitely in my mind, consider the hip drop when a defender unweights himself and he puts all of his weight on the runner's legs. You see why we want to get the hip drop tackle out of the game, right? Because it causes a lot of injuries when it happens. The hip drop tackle doesn't happen much, but the percentage of injury when it does happen is very high. And you saw that there with Joe, you know, and his ankle, and the defender landing on his ankle. So tough spot to be in. And you know, we all want to coach it better. Defenders, that's why you want to put your body in front and tackle guys in front and not reaching from behind. And the defender's in a bad spot there. He's trying to get Joe down. And the only way, you know, when you're in a bad spot, the only way is to, you know, unweight yourself and you put your weight all on his leg. So unfortunate that happened to Joe.
With Joe, do you feel like this is something that can be short term, or is there?
We'll see on the injury. We'll see. We'll evaluate Joe as we go throughout the week. We'll just take it day by day.
CJ said afterwards that he took responsibility for not being able to get the offense going again without Joe. What does he need to do to, you know, rally the troops, if you will, without Joe?
Yeah, CJ just has to do his part, I think. You know, a lot of people talk about rallying the troops and all those things. Everybody has to just own up and do their job. Like, man up, do your job, do whatever you're tasked to do on particular plays. Like, everybody just do it to the best of your ability. And CJ has to play his game, right? But it's not all on CJ or all on one person to get everyone going, right? Everybody just has to have that ownership. Everybody has to have that mindset that, you know, whatever it takes for us to win, they're ready and willing to do it on each and every play.
Have you watching the tape, what were some of the things that stood out to you?
A lot of great things on tape. I mean, first and foremost, we're just excited to get the win, right? And I think for me, it was a team win, right? When we needed plays on offense, they made plays, right? We needed the kicking game to step up, right? Emi had an outstanding game. Again, I mentioned it yesterday, but and I think he's one of the only kickers in NFL history have back-to-back weeks of over three kicks over 50 yards. So Emi is playing lights out for us, and that was one thing that definitely stood out in the game. And defensively, just seeing the guys just swarm. You know, we talk about the D-line and what they did with all the pressures, but just watching Petrie and watching how relentless he was, you know, every rep, no matter if he was rushing, no matter if he's in coverage, like he was all over the field, sideline to sideline, playing relentless. And it was just exciting to see, you know, our style of play on defense just showed through the tape from all three levels of our defense. All the guys were playing with great effort. All the guys were playing physical. Just love to see that style.
Not that it's any surprise, but with Nico Collins, continued growth, what do you attribute a lot of that to? The dedication, the way he's worked on his body, just all of it? What do you see from him in terms of specifics getting better?
Nico, he's been consistent. He's been one of our most consistent guys since I first got here. Watching Nico, watching the way he prepares throughout the week, like, he's always been the same person. Nico never gets too high or too low. Like, Nico is always even keel, always consistent, and he shows up in clutch moments, but he doesn't have to do anything different in a clutch moment. Nico is just being Nico. Like, he's making the plays that he makes, and he's been lights out again this for the start of the year. Man, he's having an outstanding year.
What's your understanding of what occurred with Aziz when he was on the Bears sideline, and do you anticipate any repercussions from the league coming out of that?
From my, you know, perspective, seeing Aziz, you know, he had a big hit on the quarterback, and everyone goes, you know, everyone gets a little antsy when the quarterback gets hit on the sideline, and, you know, but if the quarterback stays in, he's going to get hit. Like, and now I think everybody's a little sensitive when there are big hits in the league. Like, we still play a physical game, and you're going to get hit hard if you're playing against us. That's just how we operate here. And, you know, what happened after that, Aziz is, of course, he's surrounded by a lot of their players and also some staff, and they are surrounding him. We got people pushing Aziz and kicking, like, so we have to, as the game, we have to be better, right, from protecting all players involved, especially when something happens on the opposite sideline. Like, just have to be better. And we know, you know, from Aziz's perspective, we, you know, can't throw punches or anything like that. But just overall, we just have to be able to protect players, and it goes both ways. When you got guys surrounding one of our players and ununiformed staff that's surrounding, and then that in that little mix up as well, like that's a problem, and we have to get it fixed.
Are there any challenges to when giving your team a message, enjoying winning because that's the main goal, and then at the same time saying, well, we didn't play as well as we possibly could have, or we could be a lot better? Is there any challenge like when it comes to the messaging of that?
The challenge for us is always to improve and get better. That's always my challenge, right? That's how you push for greatness, right? And it's never easy, I say, to win in this league. A lot of games come down to one possession each and every week. You know, over half of the games or more than half of the games will come down to one possession. So to me, a win is a win, and we're excited to win the game. I thought our guys battled and did a great job of making the plays we needed to make to win the game. And that's always the number one goal, is to win each week.
Omari caught his first interception of the career. You said throughout, because he's got here, he's been consistent, one of the most consistent guys on the team. How cool was it just to see him see the consistency produce into an interception?
Yeah, it was really cool to see Kamari. The work that he's putting in is really cool to see him, you know, reap the benefits of that, right? And getting the pick is a matter of not just him, but it's the rush, speeding up the quarterback, and it's Kamari having really good hands. That was a difficult catch to make as well, so it was really nice play by him. But, man, credit to him. The kid's been consistent. I talk about it all the time. He's been consistent where he needs to be every single play, and he doesn't press to make plays. Some guys get in the spot and they try to press to make a play, and then you end up putting yourself in a bad position. He's in the right position all the time, and he benefited yesterday from being able to make a pick.
Domingo, what did you make of Jarrett Patterson and offensive line performance last night with Juice out, and specifically in the run game?
Proud of Jarrett for stepping in there late in the week. He had to step in, and there were a lot of calls, a lot of checks, you know, with their front. That was a tough defensive front. They did a really good job of moving. They did a really good job of, you know, really packing the box and stopping the run game. So JP stepped in, and he handled it. The communication, he handled it really well, I thought. But they played really good up front for us, and we all continue to improve all across the board on our team. Everybody has things that we can improve on.
All right, you're listening to the head coach, D'Amico Ryans, at NRG.
You mentioned about Joe Mixon, the tackle. Is that something that y'all will forward as a, you know, the film to the disciplinary committee, just sort of as on a weekly basis? I know that's part of the process. Is that part of the package that y'all was sent up there to just go, like, you're not taking sides, but, you know, you're putting your information in?
Yeah, whenever there are plays of that nature, as the hip drop or the issue with Aziz on the sideline, we always want to send those into the league to make sure we're correct in what we're saying to our players. We just want to make sure we're coaching our players the right way and make sure we're within lines of the rules and playing the game the right way. So we always try to send those plays into the league to make sure we have clarity, so our players have clarity when they're on the field, so they can play as fast as possible and leave no doubt.
Minnesota,
good man, really good team. They're coached really well. Their defense is playing great. I think they've held opponents to, I think, under 25 points so far. So their defense is playing really lights out. Offensively, they played well yesterday. Had some big explosives. They're playing well together. So we'll get further. We'll get more into those guys as we go throughout the week. But 2-0 team, and we know Minnesota is always a tough place to play, right? That crowd there is always, they're always loud. They make it challenging on us from an offensive perspective. So already know going into it, we have to be on it with our cadence. We have to be on it with our pre-snap communication all the way across the board.
D'Amico, can you talk about through 2 weeks, I know it's still early, if you had to say this is one thing that we really got to work on cleaning up? I mean, you're talking about always getting better. Is there anything that stands out to you?
The things we have to clean up, I think it starts with just being more consistent, right? I think we targeted really well and ran the ball well our first week, then coming in this week, presented different issues with the front, but we still have to be consistent and run it as best as we can. And from the penalty standpoint, I think we have to, I know we have to play cleaner there, right? We allow drives, right, to continue. We took big explosive plays off of the board. We took interceptions off of the board, like a lot of plays right there where we hurt ourselves with penalties and also just protecting the football. Like, we have to do a much better job of protecting the ball on the offensive side. We're carrying the ball. Like, we can't give the ball up there and we're in the red zone. We got points. We cannot give the ball up in that situation right there. So a lot of different things, different players have things to work on, but that's the beauty of the league. Like, who can make those adjustments, who can make those improvements and continue to get better as the season goes on.
We'll close with DJ.
Go ahead, DJ.
What kind of, I don't know if it's a game plan specific thing, but it looked like Derek was lined up on DJ Moore a lot, kind of went into that matchup, and how, what was it like watching, you know, your best corner go against their best receiver and be able to hold them under 50 yards and catch an interception?
And schematically, we do a lot of different things, and for me, defensively, whatever it takes, that specific week, that's what we'll do. Stingley was matched up, you know, on DJ Moore. Thought he did a really nice job, and to see him go attack the football, that was big time for us, and that's what we need Stingley to do.
This is a non-football question. I think some people in turn might find it valuable. What's your remedy to getting your voice back after you lose your voice? It was damn near 12 hours ago, and you couldn't even talk. What's the recipe for that?
Try to get some rest. That's it. Rest and no yelling. I don't have to yell when I get home.
They're all asleep.
You're right. All right. Appreciate it, guys.
All right, that's head coach DeMeco Ryan speaking to the media. We'll get some reaction to some of the things he had to say. He slips them in there, but he tries to set the tone from time to time on that. We'll react to that and look at this weekend wild games that the Texans got themselves out of. Some other teams weren't as lucky. We'll discuss all of that.
Explaining football to the friend who's just there for the nachos? Hard. Tailgating from home like a pro with snacks and drinks everyone will love? An easy win. And with Instacart helping deliver the snack time MVPs to your door, you're ready for the game in as fast as 30 minutes. So you never miss a play or lose your seat on the couch or have to go head-to-head for the last chicken wing. Shop game day faves on Instacart and enjoy $0 delivery fees on your first three grocery orders. Offer valid for a limited time. Other fees and terms apply.
Coming up.
It's a Shoppers John Deere Reaction Monday on Sports Radio 610. Live from the Twin Peaks Studios, here's The Drive with Sterner and Hughley.
Yeah, welcome back in. We just listened to the head coach, DeMeco Ryans, as he spoke after being able to watch the film, even though it was a late one, being able to watch the film and get back in. And my player of the game was Jalen Petrie earlier, and it was because I felt like he set the tone with physicality. And you can tell this is what DeMeco wants to have for this team and wants to have happen. And he spoke about it. What did he say? When you play us,
you're going to get hit hard.
You're going to get hit hard.
That made me football horny.
You're going to get hit hard. And he said, and he says it so casually.
Because he's dead ass serious.
Just slides it in. And, you know, this is especially defensively through two games. They may have had some struggles in week one with big plays down the field. Now, by the way, they improved on that this week. But they have laid the lumber. They are bringing it, and Jalen Petrie Alshire. I'll be honest with you. I know he said they're kind of sensitive on the end. I think they'd be a little sensitive if C.J. Stroud got hit like that, giving himself up on the sideline.
Yeah.
But I understand it. Like, he's coming in. He was all night at it. They are becoming, especially defensively, a very, very physical football team.
Yeah, look, I think one of the big things, Ron, that we haven't talked about much today, the Kyahmi Fairbairn situation, that's the second time, you know, that he that he's brought up Kaimi.
He brought it up last night. Said yeah. That's the reason why we're 2-0.
Yeah, and so like last night, that's just a powerful statement, man. I mean, obviously he's great. We got to tip our cap to Kaimi Fairbairn. You know, the only kicker in the history of the game to go in a two-game span have more than five. I think he actually has six 50-plus yard field goals. That guy right there. Yep, he's got six in two games. And so, you know, we've talked about it briefly, but being a defensive-minded head coach and really believing in your defense and having a really good defense, which I think they do. We talk about the flaws from time to time, but this is a really good defense. When you've got a defense that you can literally put the team on your back and win it the way they did yesterday, coupled with a kicker that the minute you cross midfield, you are legitimately in field goal range and you've got 3 points. At that point in time, Ron, it's really easy to go, okay, quarterback, let's be not conservative, but let's take care of the football. Let's not turn it over. It's easy to look up and say, hey, once we cross the 50, if you get a false start penalty, you're taking us out of field goal range. Right, so it's a powerful thing to have that defense and that field goal kicker, along with how explosive we know this offense can be. I mean, it hadn't been a better start to a season for anybody in a Texans uniform more so than Kaimi Fairbairn. He is doing it and doing it effortlessly as well.
Hey guys, y'all have watched him more than I have. I've at least seen him the last 4+ years. This is my 5th season with him. Where in the hell is this coming from?
Who, Kaimi?
He didn't used to be this consistent from, like, this consistent for 50. Like,
he's always been pretty damn good.
I thought he was a good kicker, but it wasn't like I mean, he's like Justin Tucker and Harrison Butker right now.
Yeah.
Like, the way, like, I just, like, automatic. From, I mean, he's been better than Justin
Tucker's
not
fallen
been,
off.
He's not been great from 50 plus here of late. But
it's rough.
I mean, you said this. We have not sat here, and like I said, I'll kind of slide this over to you all. We haven't sat here and said what Clint said throughout. Right, you cross the 50 and you're in field goal range. That's not always been the case with him.
I don't know what the numbers in the history will tell you, but I know I've watched as much Texans football as I have ever watched any one team play over the last 5 years, and I've never felt as comfortable and confident as I feel about Kaimi Fairbairn right now.
No, God, no. And they're not even – these aren't nail biters. They're right.
Yeah.
They're right. They're good from the start, the end, the middle, and the finish. Yeah, so, yeah, shout out to him. He has said that. In fact, yeah, I was talking to McLean last night, and he was like, this isn't how it always was. He is really with the length in terms of how far he's kicking these things. This seems to be a new development. All right, Clint and Tyler, real quick, yesterday, thankfully the Texans didn't get themselves involved in the situation a lot of teams had. The 49ers went and lost to the Texans' next opponent on the road, the Vikings and Sam Darnold. I don't think people saw that coming. The Ravens lost to the Raiders. The Cowboys got destroyed at home by the Saints. The Lions were 6.5-point favorites at home against the Bucks. They lost. The Jags lose to the Browns. The Rams got blown out by the Arizona Cardinals. It was a weird, weird day of a lot of favorites going down. Which one caught you off guard the most? Which favorites that caught one yesterday that was involved in that weird Sunday yesterday caught you off guard the most?
Probably the 49ers losing to the Vikings. I just the 49ers week one. I mean, you're talking about really, when you talk about the Cowboys, the Lions, the Ravens, the 49ers. I mean, these are the Rams. I mean, you're talking about teams that like this. It's Super Bowl or bust type stuff right now for those particular organizations. Yeah. The 49ers, of all those organizations, I thought the 49ers looked the best week one. I thought they looked better than anybody. And more physical, more convincing. I mean, they were in rhythm on time in the pass game. They were more physical on both lines of scrimmage. I mean, it was impressive week one. And for them to go out, and I know they're missing Christian McCaffrey, but for them to go out and then not play well, not put many points on the board against a Vikings team, again, Sam Darnold, You know, you don't expect the Vikings to be able to play up to the 49ers level. So if I had to pick one, they're all bad, but if I had to pick one, it would probably be 49ers losing to the Vikings.
That caught me off guard. The Ravens was weird. I don't know what that was. For me, I don't know that I'm the way that the Cowboys lost. Yes. The Saints came out 6 for 6 with their first 6 drives for touchdowns.
There it was. Glory
and 5 of the 6 of them were at least, shut up, Tyler, 69 yards.
Nice.
How many? There were at least 69 yards. That's there was beautiful. An 80 in there, like 2 or 3 70s. I mean, it was ridiculous. They had no answer. It didn't matter. I just that one was wild and that Ravens thing, that was weird, too. They were up 10 and just all of a sudden lost. All right, what you got coming up in the
fall? All right, I know it wasn't pretty. Hell, it wasn't pretty week one on the defensive side, and it wasn't pretty on week two on the offensive side of the football. But the first 2 weeks of the season, we've got the answers that I was looking for the Houston Texans. I'll tell you what those answers are, and I'll tell you exactly why I feel better about the Houston Texans right now than I ever have. We'll do that next right here on Sports Radio 610.